from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. From the get-go, Pope Francis was different. First Latin American ever to lead the Catholic Church. First pontiff to succeed a living pope, Benedict, in 600 years. But there was more with Pope Francis. Gone are the fancy red shoes. He takes selfies and makes cold calls and increasingly speaks his mind with a capacious openness the Vatican had not seen at the top in decades. In a landmark interview, Pope Francis has now called out his church for an obsession with gays and abortion and contraception, and he's warned the church it must find a new balance or risk failure. He's got Catholics, non-Catholics, much of the world paying attention. This hour on Pope On Point, Pope Francis, and the significance of his message. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Does this pope speak to you, for you? Do you like what you're hearing? Will it change the church or not? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We've got a strong group of Catholic thinkers with us today. A little later, we'll hear from R.R. Reno, editor of First Things magazine. But first, from South Bend, Indiana, big Vatican watcher Scott Appleby, professor of history and director of the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame. Scott Appleby, welcome back to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
With us from Philadelphia is Damon Linker, contributing editor at The New Republic. His big essay at the magazine's website has drawn a lot of attention. You can link to it through our website, onpointradio.org. Damon Linker, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Hi. Scott, first to you. I mean, this pope has already been mixing things up. Then there were the comments on the airplane where he was asked about gays and the Vatican officialdom and gays and said, who am I to judge? And then comes this interview with a Jesuit publication published all over the world, including in the Americas, in the U.S., that has really got people turning heads and looking at this pope and saying, wait, do we have a major change here? When he talks about a new balance, when he talks about watch out for an obsession, and it points in particular to contraception, to gay marriage, to abortion. What's going on here, Scott? What do you hear from this pope?
Is there a major change? Here's my answer, no and yes. The no part is this. Most of what Pope Francis is saying has been proclaimed by the church for forever, and even his predecessor, Benedict XVI, on the question of mercy and compassion and focusing on love, it's not new to Pope Francis. And of course, the identity with the poor and the pastoral care of all people in the world, not only Catholics, these are not new teachings. They are in continuity with the church. And by the way, when he focuses on questions like how to treat homosexuals, what is the role of people who are not necessarily obeying the doctrines of the church and so on, he never departs from the teaching of the church on these questions, but he's reversing the order. That is to say, we deal with persons, not with ideas or doctrines. You begin with the person, respect the dignity and presence of God in the life of that person, and you open that person's heart to Christ. The question of morality, of doctrine, and so forth, is not unimportant, but it comes. It's not prior to the opening of the heart. No, he's not departing from the good news of the Catholic Church. The way he's proclaiming it, though, is welcoming to many Catholics. Yes, how is he departing, or where is the cutting edge of what he's saying? It's in this. The debate over the Second Vatican Council, which occurred 50 years ago, those who liked or didn't like it, they would debate about the fact that it was a pastoral council. That is, it focused on care for the people of the church and applying the teachings of the church to concrete situations today. And some criticism was about how those doctrines were being applied, and some who rejected part of the application of Vatican II said, that's the wrong kind of pastoral application in the pews, in the parishes, in the real world of the teachings of the church. Pope Francis has moved that ball down the field, has changed the question by saying the order We have to reverse the order. We begin with the pastoral ministry, and then we elucidate the formal teachings of the church. But those teachings of the church must be planted in the hearts of people. So we've got it backwards, and he's reversing the order by focusing on the person, then coming with the morality and the doctrine. I think that is the most significant shift in what he's saying as opposed to the last two popes.
He talked about all kinds of things in this very extensive interview. He talked about movies and books and Fellini and you name it. But I want to do some parsing of the key portions that are getting so much attention here. Damon Linker, help us out here. When the Pope says, as he said in this interview, that the dogmatic and moral teachings of the church are not all equivalent, what is he saying there, Damon?
Well, I think what he's trying to do is to embed these things that at least in the Western media we hear about so much from the Catholic hierarchy, abortion, gay marriage, other sexual teachings, sexual morality. He's trying to embed them in a deeper teaching of the church as a teaching of salvation, of trying to bring all of humanity into the fold of the message of Jesus Christ. That's what the Catholic Church at some level is always saying, but there are different ways of kind of hitting that message. And I think there's a feeling among a lot of Catholics, especially in the modern West, that over the last two popes, over the last 34 years under John Paul II and Benedict XVI, a kind of concern that kind of the emphasis was placed a little bit more on fighting those culture war battles so that they were taking precedence and that the rest of the teaching or the rest of the message of the church was somehow folded into the sexual critique of a lot of modern sexual behavior. And it really is, I agree with Scott Appleby, that it's really not a massive change, not necessarily as much as some in the media are making it out to be, so much as a difference of emphasis, kind of placing a finger on another side of the scale and pushing down a little bit. That's the answer to your question about, you know, what's the context for him saying these things about abortion and these other kind of polarizing sexual issues.
I mean, I guess it's clear that what the Pope says here, it's not the same as going in and changing dogma or something. On the other hand, it's not just the media. I've heard lots of Catholics in all kinds of settings over the past 3 or 4 days, Scott Appleby, talking about this. Many progressive Catholics absolutely kind of ecstatic about this change in language and emphasis and focus. And conservative Catholics, you can see them all over the place, wringing their hands about it, Scott. So, I mean, it's not just the media.
There are two models of the church that are associated, fairly or not, with on the one hand, Pope Benedict and then Pope Francis. Pope Benedict's pontificate was associated with a model of the church that was pure, orthodox, and had been pruned, as one commentator put it,
i.e. smaller.
Of those who were not sufficiently orthodox. By stark contrast, Pope Francis goes out of his way, especially in this latest interview, to describe the church as a church for all people, not just for Catholics, and certainly not just for Orthodox Catholics in the sense of those who check the box and can say, we ascribe to the teaching of the church in every detail, we follow the teachings of the church in great morality. Francis is saying the church is grateful for those Catholics, of course, but the mission of the church is to go out to those who are disaffected, who are alienated, who are hurting. It's a mission of compassion and mercy. It's a mission of healing. This is the gospel, and the gospel unfolds in that kind of practice. So his vision of the church is magnanimous, and he talks about magnanimity in the interview. We have to have a great vision that extends beyond the walls of the institutional church, but he also contrasts magnanimity with being focused, detailed. He uses the word small, by which he means person to person, focusing on the person in front of you, mm-hmm. in all of their struggles, but also recognizing, he says very strikingly, that every human being, whether they've had an abortion, whether they have committed murder, whether they are the most pious and obedient Catholic we can find, every human being has the presence of God. He says very strikingly, the one dogma I want to mention now is that God is present to every person, and we must respect that presence. That is just breathtaking. It's the teaching of the Church, but the way he says it, and the clear rootedness of this Pope, this man, in the sufferings of the poor and in the needs of individual people, rings authentic with Catholics. This is why they became Catholics, because they want Christ present to suffering people. And that Church is every human being on earth.
But Damon, he's powerfully focused on the personal, but he is also looking at the institutional and the very largest scale. He says, we have to find a new balance. Otherwise, even the moral edifice of the Church is likely to fall like a house of cards. That's talking on the grandest scale about the Church's morality and the Church itself, it seems to me, Damon.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the thing that I find fascinating about the whole reaction to the things that the Pope is saying is it really is a matter of words and rhetoric. I mean, at this point, I thought that progressive Catholics were eager to and praying for and hoping for the Church to actually liberalize at the level of the institution and its doctrines and dogmas to some extent, especially on the sexual teachings. And there's absolutely no sign that this Pope is going to do that. And yet, progressive Catholics are in a kind of ecstatic response mode right now, listening to these words as if the words are sufficient. It actually reminds me a little bit of how progressives responded to Barack Obama's first campaign for president.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new kind of pope, the warm, open message of Pope Francis, saying let's not obsess on gays and abortion and what this Pope means for the Catholic Church. He has been speaking at a lot, big interview that was published last week, turning all kinds of heads, but it wasn't just last week. Here he was on a week-long tour of Brazil in July. Pope Francis visited Rio de Janeiro's favelas or slums and spoke to thousands of people gathered there about fighting inequality.
No one can remain insensitive to the inequalities that persist in the world. Everybody should be able to make a personal contribution to putting an end to so many social injustices.
And on the flight back to the Vatican from that visit, talked with journalists, was asked about gay priests. Here's what he said, the Pope.
If a person is gay and seeks God and has goodwill, who am I to judge him?
A pope who says, who am I to judge? And here, hundreds of thousands of people performing a flash mob dance for the pope in Rio.
Grande surpresa para o Papa Francisco. É hora do maior flash mob do mundo.
Okay, it's a new sound. You can join the conversation this hour. What are you hearing in the striking messages of this pope? Catholics, do you welcome this pope's common touch, modest ways, open arms? What he says, do you welcome his new comments on gays and abortion? Is Pope Francis right? Has the Catholic Church been too obsessed, his word, with these issues? Scott Appleby is with us from Notre Dame. He's director of the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies, professor of history there. Damon Linker is with us, contributing editor at the New Republic. Great essay he wrote about the difference between words and action, but with a good eye on this whole issue. And the Pope joins us today from Philadelphia. Lots of people responding online. It's written, I mean, Kat says, Francis is cool. Leah says, I'm happy with the Pope's new message of tolerance. Nelson says, makes me almost want to join the Catholic Church. But not everybody's going for it. Gail says, old pope, new pope, same tired old religion. And others concerned and publishing here and there that, he may be setting back the conservatives in the American Catholic community who have been working hard. On Twitter, there's even an account for, of course, it's not God, but it's the tweet of God says, Pope Francis is either the world's coolest pope or the world's most conservative hippie. We're sorting it all out today. Damon Linker, in a moment, our Rusty Reno joins us. Just a couple more minutes here. Damon, when the Pope says That we have to find a new balance, otherwise even the moral edifice of the church is likely to fall like a house of cards. What does he mean, Damon?
Well, I think in part he's responding to the fact that the church really has had, for want of a better term, a PR problem over the last decade. The Catholic sex abuse scandal really was devastating throughout much of the world, especially in the West, the United States, Ireland, and other places. And there was a strange tendency over the last decade, although the church was struggling to deal with this, to kind of not see the tension and the conflict that you got from a lot of messages of the church, where on the one hand you had this disgraceful, horrifying spectacle of all of these priests who were accused of abusing children and then the church seemingly covering it up. And then on the other hand, so many of the church's public statements seeming to be focused on the sexual behavior of parishioners. And that has led a lot of Catholics in the United States, at least, and I know in Ireland as well, to just say, well, what is this, this seeming obsession with the sexual behavior of parishioners when the Catholic Church has priests in it who abuse kids? And so I think part of what he's getting at is this disjunct or disconnect where you have too much focus on this very relatively small number of sexual teachings when the church has really so much more to say about the world and salvation and injustices.
And so the fall of the House of Cards is a warning that the church itself, the institution of the church, is in trouble if we don't rebalance? That's the word
he
uses?
Well, certainly in the West it is. I mean, demographically, the church in Europe is very much dying. I mean, the number of people who attend church is down tremendously in Ireland, in Spain, in Italy, and historically very Catholic countries, France as well. Church attendance is cratering. And in the United States, you know, if we didn't have Hispanic immigration balancing it out, it wouldn't be doing great here as well. The church is growing in the global South, but not in the historic in its historic home in the West. And he is speaking, I think, to a concern that if the church isn't seen to be engaging in a broader spectrum of the problems that people face in their lives, that people will just tune out completely.
Scott Appleby, I've got Rod Dreher writing here in the American Conservatives. The headline is, "The Pope did more damage than he realized," and he says that the Pope's interview is being widely interpreted as a pontifical command to surrender the culture war in the name of pastoral prudence, keeping the church strong. What about that interpretation? Do you see
well,
that?
Well, it's silly, but it's not unfounded, because the way the media reports what the Pope says, of course, lifts up what seems to be the most controversial but misunderstood. Let's clarify what he's saying. First of all, he's in continuity with Benedict XVI in this notion of the new evangelization. This is the buzzword over the last number of years. Catholics recognize that they have to evangelize. That is, they have to proclaim the gospel. And that's one way to renew the face of the church and to help it grow. And it's not, there's nothing he said ever in any of these interviews or statements that indicate that he is a pro-choice or disagrees with the traditional teaching on
contraception. But the culture war is not exactly about doctrine. It's about fighting the fight. It's about wading into the culture and taking on trends that a doctrine or a particular representative of it may not like. At that level.
That's what I think the Pope Francis means about the church collapsing like a house of cards in this sense. I think he means it not just about demographics and membership. Mm-hmm. He means spiritually. That is, if we get involved in the culture wars and debate this political issue or that sexual morality issue, we have lost the focus of what the church is supposed to be. It's supposed to proclaim salvation through Jesus Christ, through our humanity, which is redeemed by God. That's the message. When it's not that you don't, within that message, call people into fidelity to the gospel, into a holy life. You do. But the way the church collapses is if you reduce that message to the latest latest culture war trend, you miss the point. The only way to reach people is to convert them, that is to welcome them into a new lifestyle and a new point of view. And you don't do that by hitting them over the head with this or that socio-political issue. That comes later.
Damon, when I read deeply in here, and I mean, yes, certain things are getting a lot of attention. The Pope knows they will. But when he was asked by this Jesuit magazine, what should the church say to divorced and remarried people and homosexuals? And the sort of big line in his response, and this strikes my ears as very interesting. He says, religion, this is Pope Francis, religion has the right to express its opinion in the service of the people. But God in creation has set us free. It is not possible to interfere spiritually in the life of a person. Damon Linker, I'm not a theologian, but reading that, that seems to give a lot of latitude to the individual.
It does. And I, frankly, when he goes, I think, a little bit far in what I would call a Jesuitical direction, as he does in that passage, I'm not exactly sure what to make of it, frankly. Because if you follow its implications, it would seem to imply that there's no reason to even join the church. I mean, this is the dynamic of a certain kind of liberal Christianity over the last 200 years, that the further you go in the direction of liberalizing the church, the more irrelevant it seems to be. You know, why not just become a modern liberal who, you know, gets together with some friends and says a prayer every now and then that's it. But it is complicated. I mean, the very day after this an amazing interview was published all over the world, the Pope spoke to a room full of gynecologists and said the following thing about abortion. Mm-hmm. Every child that isn't born but is unjustly condemned to be aborted has the face of Jesus Christ, has the face of the Lord. Now, that's something that Benedict, John Paul II, any Orthodox Catholic priest or layperson could have said. And so that shows that the very next day he's trying to show, hey, look, you know, I'm not saying that the church doesn't uphold these views, these moral positions. It really is about, I think, a kind of messaging and trying to open the doors of the church and look to be inviting. And clearly, this Pope is extremely sophisticated when it comes to saying what the media, especially in the Western world, will gravitate to and like and approve of, and it's having an incredible effect.
It's not just the media listening, though. It's not just
the
media. You guys keep bringing that up, and I see the phone lines full of people who aren't media. Maybe we should hear from them. I'm struck by that line. It hasn't gotten much attention. God in creation has set us free. It is not possible to interfere spiritually in the life of a person. From the Pope, the leader of the Catholic Church. Margaret, in short.
Can I say one thing about that?
Yes.
Damon is right that he's sometimes too Jesuitical. I have to laugh at that. That's true. He's a little bit too subtle. But what he's saying here is not that the church doesn't minister to and instruct, inform people. Of course it does.
And of course he says that, express its opinion in the service of the people. Yes.
Yes, but the point is that you don't spiritually intervene in the sense that God is already present to that person. The church doesn't bring that presence. What the church does is to lift up, purify, clarify God's work in that person's life. It's not that the church doesn't intervene. Of course it does, but not in the sense that it brings something to the person that's not already present to the person.
But there's something in the balance. He goes on to say, tell me. He asks the rhetorical question, tell me, Pope Francis said, when God looks at a gay person, does he endorse the existence of this person with love or reject and condemn this person? We must always consider the person. Margaret in Shorewood, Wisconsin. Margaret, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a pastoral musician. I've been working in the church for my whole adult life for 30 years, mm-hmm. and I love the new Pope. And I read with great interest the interview in America on Thursday, and I happened to have choir practice that night. So knowing the media would hone in on like three words of the interview, I photocopied the whole thing, all 16 pages for my choir, and went through some of the amazing parts of the interview. What I think is that the most important thing a leader does is set the tone. And if they don't, they don't even have to do much else if they do that well. And I'm so excited about the new welcoming, warm tone of the Pope. And we do, one of your guests was talking about the new evangelization, which we talk about till we're blue in the face.
Yeah.
How to get Catholics back, how to welcome new Catholics. But then we are stuck on these issues that the Pope highlighted. And the truth is, we not only do we all have Catholic, I mean, gay friends, children,
sure,
relatives, and people we love, but we also have gay priests. And this constant hammering on that one issue is hurtful. So I'm just so happy for so many reasons about Francis. And right down to the minute he selected his name, I thought that was a wonderful harbinger, yeah, of good things to come.
Margaret, I so appreciate your call from Shorewood, Wisconsin there. Thank you. A couple more. Trish in Paris, Kentucky. Trish, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to go back and talk about this whole idea of, you know, progressives in the Catholic Church and doctrine. There was a comment made a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Doctrine for a Catholic now is not even an issue. People, the congregation of Catholics, do not care about doctrine. I've been a Catholic my entire life, and I have used birth control my entire life, and so has 95% of the Catholic congregation, maybe more.
Mm.
If you look around, no one's having 8, 9, 10 children. It's irrelevant. It's,
true,
not, it's a non-issue for Catholics. They just ignore it. So once doctrine is ignored, I don't care whether it's government or religion, it doesn't matter. Once doctrine is so out of touch with the pulse of the congregation that it is now not even an issue, it doesn't even cross my mind. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have any weight. It doesn't carry any weight. It's irrelevant. It has been made rendered useless once doctrine is not followed, and it is not followed. I'm divorced. I go to church. I'm a Catholic. I receive communion, and I'm not getting an annulment. So when you look at things like that, and you look at doctrine and how doctrine has been rendered absolutely useless, to say that the words are not enough from the church, that words are not enough, words are everything, because the doctrine at this point is useless because the congregation does not care. So in addressing the comment that was made earlier,
yeah,
about how I think these are just words, that is all that matters now, because most of the Catholics don't care about doctrine. It's so out of touch with the pulse of what the Catholic congregation is.
Trish, you argue like a Jesuit there. Let me put it to Damon Linker. Damon, you wrote, progressive Catholics need to understand that the change is and likely to remain a matter of words. Trish, you heard her. She says, well, that's all that matters right now.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. You know, before Pope Francis came in, I would not have guessed that all progressive Catholics really need to get excited again are some good speeches and interviews. I mean, I thought that what was at stake was an attempt and a hope for a reform of the doctrine of the church. You know, you often hear we want married priests, we want women's ordination,
yes, yes,
we want the contraception teaching lifted, the ban lifted. And instead, what I'm hearing from the listener,
mm-hmm,
here is essentially, well, we're already way past that anyway. Who cares what they're saying, what the church officially teaches? We want uplifting language from the top. Well, then, if that's the case, then this really will be a revolutionary pontificate, because that's all. You know, it seems as if Pope Francis is perfectly willing to come quite far in that direction.
Of course, it's more than uplifting language, because Trish is saying in her life she's moved. She's sort of making her own doctrine, and that's just the way it is and has been for a while.
I suppose, although I have a hard time believing that the Pope himself would be really satisfied that that's entirely enough.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. But Trish is saying, look, we're rolling here. You know, we can't change, you know, the policy on priests and so on. But on contraception, she's got her own path. We have one more here. Mary, Southborough, Massachusetts. Mary, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to quickly say the reason most people are Catholics is because they were born to Catholic parents. But that's another point, just to disagree with your
panelists.
Yes,
panelist. I heard that, yeah.
The point I want to say is about the nuns. The sisters who are doing the pastoral work have been stifled. They've been censored by the bishops, and now the bishops have taken over their council so that because they're furious with them for while they work with the poor, they're not hammering the message against abortion and against contraception and against homosexuality. What do you think this is going to do in that realm?
Mary, we're going to come right back to women after a short break here. I'm so glad you raised the issue. Thank you very much for that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about a new kind of Pope, Pope Francis, what he's saying, and what it may mean for the Catholic Church. Damon Linker joins us from Philadelphia, contributing editor at the New Republic. Scott Appleby joins us from Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. Right now from New York, R.R. Rusty Reno joins us, editor of First Things magazine, a monthly journal of religion, culture, public life. Catholic, theological, and political conservative. Rusty, thank you very much for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Tom.
I want to get your big take on this, but I don't want to step away from our last caller there. And let's just start there. I'll start with you, Rusty. The Pope on women. The headlines have been about contraception. Well, that relates to women. About abortion, that relates. They've been about gays, gay marriage. But he was in this same interview asked specifically about women in the church and their role. Do you hear a different message on women from Pope Francis, Rusty Reno?
No, he seems to follow both John Paul II and especially John Paul II in emphasizing the essential difference between men and women. And in that sense, he's very much against the spirit of our age, which wants to say that differences are socially constructed, whereas he seems to be saying that women are essentially different and that the church needs to discern what their role is in the church, but it will be a different one from men.
Scott Appleby, how did you read this? The question he's asked, and he asked rhetorically, what should the role of women be in the church? And he says at one point, the feminine genius is needed wherever we make important decisions. But at the heart of it, he says, I am wary of a solution that can be reduced to a kind of female machismo because a woman has a different makeup than a man. What's your interpretation,
Scott? I agree with what Rusty Reno just said. I think he's very much in continuity with John Paul II and Benedict on that question. I was at the University of Dayton over the weekend, 200 people, Catholics, studying various aspects of American Catholic life, and many of the women in that meeting, of course, everyone was talking about the Pope's interview. And several women stood up and said, great, 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 he got to women, and somehow he doesn't get it. So when he says things like female machismo or essentially different, they, as Rusty said, they don't buy that. They hear that as essentialist language, that we are essentially this and essentially that. They wouldn't be strict social constructivists, these moderate to liberal Catholic women, but they certainly feel that the way of fundamentally separating men from women in kind of a deep essential way has also been used by some people as a way of what they would see as repressing women or not calling women forward with their gifts. But I do agree that Pope Francis has not veered, at least in those comments, very far at all from the more recent teaching on this question.
But Damon Linker, the American nuns, for just to take one group of women, have been big standard bearers for paying more attention to economic issues, and they've been disciplined and, you know, whacked back by the Vatican. Do you see any change in that here? Because that seems to be closer to the heart of what this Pope is emphasizing, these socioeconomic issues.
Well, that again, I think, shows the complexity of the issue. One of the first things that Pope Francis did when he became Pope was to reaffirm the findings of the committee that Pope Benedict had investigating the nuns and essentially reprimanding them.
Yeah.
So he backed up that committee, and there's no sign of him backing down from it, at least yet. He also, in that interview on the plane, the press availability he did coming back from Rio a month or so ago, he was asked about women's ordination, women being allowed to become priests, and he very bluntly said that door is closed. And then referred people to a statement of John Paul II on this issue, in which John Paul said that effectively the church has no power to ordain women, so it's not even something that can be discussed. God didn't give the church the power to do that. So on this issue, you know, again, rhetorically, the Pope speaks very openly about women and affirming women in their role in the church and in God's plan, but it's not anything like a more secular, liberal outlook on the role that women might play in the institution,
so
I think.
Yeah, the Vatican took that kind of hit at American nuns and where they were going. Rusty Reno, did you feel a sort of upbraiding from this pope in the portion where he talked about let's not be obsessed with these things, where, you know, if we don't have the right balance, we lose the moral edifice of the church, that the church risks losing the freshness and fragrance of the gospel. I would think that's a pretty big deal, and he seems to be aiming that criticism or that admonition at stern conservative interpreters. Did you take it that way, Rusty?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. I think the essential message he's trying to get across is to us is to not let the world dictate the terms of the church's witness. And the world today is preoccupied with sexual liberation. Catholics would not be talking about gay marriage if gay marriage weren't being talked about by secular activists. So it's very important, you know, for the church to meet the challenges of the time, but not let those challenges dictate the terms of its witness. I think it's very important.
Rodrigue
writes. That's my overarching reading, but I think it is the case that he consistently, if you go through this interview, the problems that he identifies are always the problems associated with a conservative outlook.
And what do you take from that? What do you take from it?
There are two dangers. There's one danger of a kind of self-enclosed retreat from the world into what he calls this sort of exaggerated doctrinal security. That is a problem. Mm-hmm. Another problem is a kind of engagement with the world that winds up bleaching out all of this distinctiveness of Christian witness. There are two different sides, not engaging or engaging but having nothing to offer, so to speak. And in this interview, he consistently focuses, as I said, on the dangers of this kind of self-enclosed conservatism. And that seems to be his discernment of the problem that we face. I think he's mistaken about that. I don't think that's the problem, by and large, that we face.
You don't fear the collapse of the moral edifice that the Pope fears?
No, I mean, that's a separate question. I just don't think that, in my experience with the church, that people are preoccupied with these hot-button culture war issues. You know, that's not what the homilies are. In fact, we had the woman who called in who effectively said that in her parish, this stuff is just not relevant. Well, it must mean that her parish priest is not hammering away on it. Otherwise, she'd be very alienated from her parish.
But I would think, I mean, I'm not Catholic, but in my church, if I were told that I was, you know, helping or pushing in a way that would lose the freshness and fragrance of the gospel, that would hurt.
Well, yeah, I, as I said, I think that he's correct that there is a danger with this kind of self-enclosed conservatism. It's just that I don't think it's an accurate description of the American church right now.
Though the Pope appears to, or at least of some conservative.
Well, I think that we should realize a friend of mine asked me what I felt about the interview, and I kind of quipped that I now had more sympathy for Nigerian Catholics under Pope Benedict.
Well, I wonder about that. Could he be at risk of losing American bishops in the same way that the church is? You know, the conservatism is in Africa now, and it's kind of going.
Well, I think we need to realize that in South America, the biggest threat to the Catholic Church is not secularism, but Pentecostalism, which does emphasize the essential message of Christ. You have a lot of immigrants that are coming to Buenos Aires from places like Paraguay and Peru. You know, people of Indian descent, native descent, who are nominally Catholic. Well, the Pentecostals are very effective in those communities. And so the challenges that he's responding to may be different from the ones that the American bishops feel that they're responding to. And he'll get feedback on this.
Let's go to Karen in Milwaukee. Karen, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
As I told the screener, I grew up in a Big Ten church and where you could have a wide spectrum of views. I think that has been lost in the recent past. I have felt like an outsider. In fact, I grew up in a Jesuit parish called Jesu. And I think that where the American bishops lost their way, and I wish your guests would consider this, is when Ralph Reed became a consultant to the American bishops. It seemed to me everything kind of compressed and got very tight. And I wish they would speak to that, please.
That's a good one to pick up. Ralph Reed's era coincided or was a precursor to the era when Catholic bishops got very involved in American politics, right down to particular candidates. I wonder, Scott Appleby, if this admonition in a way from the Pope, yes, it doesn't change doctrine, but might it warn American Catholics out of direct involvement in politics that they've certainly picked up in recent years?
Lay Catholics, the Pope Francis's position, as far as I can discern it from these interviews, is in continuity again with the previous popes. And the position is this. Of course, lay Catholics should be. They are called to be involved in politics and in disseminating, spreading the gospel in professional life more generally.
But I'm asking bishops themselves who have been very active in that arena.
Well, but Pope John Paul II and I think Pope Francis in a different mode are both said, cautioned wariness about bishops and priests becoming so directly involved in the political sphere, because the calling of the religious, the bishops, the priests, clergy, is to proclaim the gospel, teach what the church teaches, and to help to instruct the laity in their political life, but not themselves to become partisans. And so to the extent that any group of bishops is receiving important consultation from a political operative like Ralph Reed, who, by the way, is not a Catholic, he's an evangelical Christian, that would seem to fly in the face of the wisdom to go slowly without, because Pope Francis in this interview warns against turning the faith into an ideology. He does that a couple of times, mm-hmm. of becoming so enmeshed in the day-to-day back and forth politically that the faith becomes reduced to a political platform, and it's much greater than that. The day-to-day fisticuffs, politically, so to speak, have to be engaged by Catholic lawyers and politicians and so on who are lay people.
Rusty, this is kind of in your corner. Doesn't change doctrine, but might this Pope's message in this interview and over time warn American Catholic bishops a bit back out of American politics?
Perhaps, although the high watermarks of recent Catholic involvement in politics was the 1980s, when the bishops had some very liberal letters that they published to try to influence public debate about the economy and about nuclear deterrence. So actually, the church has been backing away from explicit engagement in political advocacy really for the last couple of decades. It's actually progressive Catholicism that is far, far more committed to direct political involvement than conservative Catholicism.
Let's go to Bernadette in Indian Lake, New York. Bernadette, thank you for calling. You're on.
Thank you. I think the new Pope is a lovely man, and he's on the right track, but I think it's all window dressing. He's not addressing the pedophile ring, and one of the first things he needs to do is to get Cardinal Law extradited back to the United States for his part in the pedophile ring in Boston. All names of every pedophile priest should be turned over to the authorities. They should be arrested, put on trial, hopefully convicted. And just as a last thought, you don't get to be Monsignor, Bishop, Archbishop, Cardinal, Pope, unless you've gone along with the program. So with that, I'll take any comments off the air.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bernadette, it's been a very big issue and a very deep one. Damon Linker, all window dressing, Bernadette says. Your analysis is maybe closest to that, and she looks in particular at the problems with sexual abuse that have plagued the church recently. What do you see the Pope saying, doing there?
Well, I think the church belatedly has acted to address those issues. I think actually Pope Benedict did a lot to kind of centralize authority and direction of investigating the priest scandals.
Bernadette's not near satisfied you here. She wants extradition and complete transparency.
Well, I think that there is something to be said for all of that. I do think that there has been progress made, and a lot of the sexual abuse of children actually took place decades ago. There's a lot of redress still to be done to make things right to the extent that they can be. But I do think that this is on the whole, a problem of the past that needs to be addressed. It doesn't speak as much to the church in the present. I think the peak of the abuse of kids happened about three decades ago.
Scott Appleby, this is still a very new pope. Let's look for a minute at what's coming here, because he's building now, step by step, quite a mountain of language that people are really taking note of and they will remember. But he has to act within the church. He's the guy at the top. So does this set him up for a papacy of conflict with the Curia, with his bishops in different regions of the world? Is he setting up a battle here somehow, Scott?
One of the striking aspects of the interview is a recurrent theme of patience. The Pope, when he speaks specifically about reform in the church, whatever people's expectations that reform might take, from extraditing sexual abusers to changing the role of women or whatever it might be, and I'm not suggesting Pope Francis has indicated any specifics to, on these questions as to what reform may or may not entail. The point is that he counsels in that interview that the church, you have to discern a big concept of a Jesuit, from a Jesuit perspective, is discernment. So you begin with the proclamation of the gospel. You begin with reflection upon the teachings of Christ and of the church. But then you take some time, and he's made it clear, we have to discuss, we have to dialogue. I've been reprimanded by some of the other bishops. He doesn't say this in a churlish, churlish way,
right,
but I think he's open to dialogue and to taking some time. So Bernadette will not like this answer, but patience in the sense of discerning the right way forward for church reform, if we want to call it that, that's the way he's going to proceed. So I would not expect radical changes anytime soon, because he's committed to discernment and dialogue as part of a process to asking how the church should reform.
Well, just a few months into a new papacy, it looks like we're in for a very interesting papacy. Expectations by this kind of language can ramp up very high. They may be there right now. Scott Appleby at Notre Dame, it's been great to have you with us today. Damon Linker with The New Republic, and RR, Rusty Reno from First Things Magazine. My great thanks to all of you. What a fascinating pope. What a fascinating conversation with you. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.